Does anybody have a baby wipe? Well, today we're talking about serving others. In fact, we're talking about leadership. And in the world, there are a handful of models what a leader should be like. But there seems to be one model that tends to be the predominant model throughout history. And that is the model in which people of privilege and class and power have others serve them, and they believe that they need to be served themselves because of their status in the world. And we've seen that. Whoops, let me get back to my sermon. There we go. There were two movies that, a movie and a book here that was out here, and I just lost my sermon. Come on, what's going on here? So I'm having problems with my computer. There we go. That's the first time that happened. But like I said, it's a leadership that basically said that I am powerful, I'm rich, I'm royal blood, I have immense privilege, and all you down here, you are to serve me and for what I want. And again, I said there are two different storylines that I've read in the last year that brings that out. Recently, in the last week, there's a new movie out called Delicious. Has anybody had a chance to see that movie? It's a great book. Matter of fact, it's a French movie. It's a French movie that you have English subtitles, but it's a great movie that describes what was taking place before the Revolutionary War in France and how the peasants and how people were treated back in those days. But I'll get back to that in a second. But there's a book that I really, really love that I read about a year and a half ago. It's called Spartacus. What I love about Spartacus, the author did a great job helping us to understand what the Roman Empire looked like and how the Roman Empire was defeated because of one bad attitude. The privileged people believed that they should have slaves in their life, and so their economy, basically, their philosophy was to have slaves, the slaves served them, and the slaves were treated as terrible, but they had very, very little value. Many times, their property as well as their animals was treated better. And so it was based on a slave type of economy. In fact, what would they do? They would go, and the Roman Empire would go into a nation, go into a community, and they would capture and overtake that community, and they would turn the people into slaves. Now, these are productive agriculture people, people that were doing very well for their economics. They worked very hard, whatever the service might be. They're out there working for it because they had some value of themselves, making sure they can feed and take care of their family. But the Roman Empire did something that was really, really bad, really awful. They would go in, and they would turn these people into slaves. And what happened was the productivity went down terribly. But that was their economy. That was the way they believed people like us, who didn't have privilege, who didn't have money, who didn't have power, were basically treated in a very bad way. Now, some people can become citizens, but they really made many people stay at a level where they're just slaves. A terrible concept. So they led by having people serve them. Now, why is that important? Well, the story has to do with Spartacus was a person, they were looking for gladiators, people who fought in the arena. And back in those days, that was their sport. They loved, they actually had bloodlust, as they would call it. They looked forward to seeing these gladiators go into the arena and kill. And they were looking for a specific type of men. And these are slaves, but they knew that most slaves would not fight in the arena. Mostly, if they got into the arena, they wouldn't try to live. They wouldn't try to work hard to become great gladiators because they had no hope. They were slaves. They had no value. So what they did with these men, they were looking for men that actually had a quality about them where they actually had hope. And somehow in their mind, in their heart, They believed that they could escape being a slave, or they used their opportunity as a slave to do something differently. Instead of feeling like they were victims, they turned around and they start loving the people around them, and they started to serve all those people, and they felt that that was a great quality of life. So they actually had hope. They had determination, and they were looking for men like that to be in the arena because they want men that would go in there, learn to fight, because life was important for them. And that's where Spartacus came in. Spartacus was this amazing person who was found in a mine, okay, basically in a desert. There was no way for him ever escaping, because if he would have left that mine, there's just no way he would have survived in the desert. So they found this person. They talked about this person. They brought this person in, taught him to be a gladiator. And what was unique about Spartacus was he truly had hope. Somehow he felt like if he lived life to the fullest and believed in his value, that somehow that he would have a life, no matter how bad it was, at least it had some type of quality. And that literally helped all the slaves around him. In fact, the slaves turned to love Spartacus because of that. Matter of fact, Spartacus was able to help them to have that same type of attitude. Not only that, unique legend about Spartacus, he found a wife, but what was so unique about the wife, he treated his wife as an equal, which became a legend in the Roman community because the wives of Roman leaders were not treated equally, and now there was a legend of Spartacus who loved his wife. So now you get this guy who is now building himself as a legend. I love the story. You could see that. And suddenly he escapes, men left with him, and before he knew it, he started to put together a band of warriors. And this band grew, and slaves were willing to give up their lives to be part of Spartacus because they knew Spartacus loved them so much. And to develop an army that almost defeated the Roman Empire, the greatest empire that this world has ever seen, especially the Roman soldiers. They came in with 80 miles to Rome. They were heading that way. They were defeating all the Roman armies and the commanders because they were fighting on their terms and not Spartacus' terms. And what happened was the commander that literally defeated them 85, 75 miles from Rome was able to fight on Spartacus' term, which is a whole different strategy, and defeat Spartacus. But see, it didn't stop there. It did not stop there. His leadership of serving his people and loving his people continued to grow. And it grew and grew. And what happened in Rome itself, the slaves picked up on that leadership of Spartacus, that legend, and they themselves saw hope. And guess how Rome was destroyed from within because of the slaves. Now, why do I say that? Because his leadership style was of Jesus Christ, one who served and loved others. And we see this also in this movie called Delicious, which is a great movie about a wonderful chef who gets fired by Duke. He makes this amazing food. In the beginning of the show, you see like 36 servants, from servants to cooks and all that, making this decadent type of food, and they would walk in, which is pillars of food, into a room that only had about 12 people of royalty serving them. And you could see the tremendous decadence as well as the class difference. And this was a way of understanding what the French people were feeling at the time before the revolution. And basically what happened, he discovered or created the very first restaurant in France because he had a different perspective. He started to serve others. So my point here is that there are leadership styles that are awful out there. There are leadership styles that have this expectation that people serve me. Now, what was happening with Jesus Christ, as you know, it's a story about Jesus Christ right at the upper room. Just before he was arrested, he was with his disciples, and he's basically given them his last will and testament. They didn't know it, but Jesus was about to die. They try his best to let him know that I have to leave, but they didn't see that. They saw that Jesus was on top, okay? He was on top of his game. In fact, they felt like they were on the winning team. Everything was going right for the disciples. Now remember where the disciples started. They were actually people that were just hardworking people, but they served under the leadership of the Roman Empire. Again, the Roman Empire basically made sure that you are slaves and you better serve me. If you don't, you get hurt. And then they lived and under the servitude of the religious leaders. The religious leaders had a terrible attitude. They used God's law in a way to have the people serve them. So their value as a person and the model of leadership was terrible until Jesus Christ came along and chose the disciples to be a part of his gang, his company, his team. And now they were witnessing something very special happening, not only to the lives of people around them, but to their lives too. They realized they were valuable. They realized they had some importance. And they were on the winning team. And that felt good. Jesus on top of his game, and I'm using those terms, but I'll use other terms here to understand, help us understand that. But things were going well. And so, before a note, the disciples were getting an attitude, okay? So, this could be a team. I don't know if you've seen, I know I'm but the Warriors just won, and I've been on winning teams before. When you are on a winning team, you start getting this attitude, this confidence that no one can beat you. And you just go in the games. And that doesn't just happen when it comes to sports. It also happens to music. It happens to a debate team. It happens to a quartet. It can happen to a band who know that they're good and they're winning competition. And there's a point where they're feeling, yeah, we are good. And there's sort of a prideness that comes with it. And there's sort of some expectations that you have. And also there's a perspective that you had when it comes to looking at other people. And now here it is. Everything is going well with the disciples. People are looking up to them. They see them as leaders. And I can't imagine, you know, what they were going through after 3 years. I could see there, oh my goodness, look, everybody, there's Andrew. He was right there with Jesus, and he fed all of us with loaves and fishes and loaves of bread. Man, oh, he is awesome. He's a part of this great team. Look at this leadership, and they're growing in value in their community. Well, there's Peter. Oh, my goodness, he walked on water. Wow, that is amazing. So there is this attitude, there's a sense that, you know, hey, I'm a part of a team. People looking up to me as leaders, I'm becoming great. And that was the problem that the disciples had at that time. Here they are at the upper room. Jesus is trying to give them some very important words about the future. And they started to struggle with quarrels. They started to quarrel with one another. They start getting angry. I'm going to be the better one. Yeah. Look at me. I'm going to be the great leader here. Look at how people look at me. Yeah. And so they start getting into this attitude that leadership, again, is about what? People serving them. And they start to quarrel about who was going to be the greatest leader. Because they knew that they're part of a very amazing dynamic that was changing that whole area. And Jesus had to deal with it. He knew that unless he changed their attitude, they were never going to be efficient, wonderful leaders in the kingdom of God. And he basically made it very clear. So, this is what happened. They were arguing with each other, and he also used washing their feet. Again, we take for granted how powerful that is. So Jesus, a dispute also arose among them as to which of them was to be regarded as the greatest. And he said to them, the king of the Gentiles exercised lordship over them, and those in authority over them are called benefactors. But not so with you. Rather, let the greatest among you become as the youngest, and the leader as one who serves. For who is the greater, one who reclines at the table or one who serves? It is not the one who reclines at the table, but I am among you as the one who serves. Now, you need to know that. That is profound. We've been used to it. We've heard it every year. Jesus washes feet. He tells us how to lead and how to serve. But this is a profound statement. This is a profound idea when it comes to leading people, is to serve others. Not only that, okay, we take for granted about who Jesus is sometimes in our lives. As Christians, we breathe Jesus, we live Jesus, we're pretty people who talk about Jesus, but sometimes we forget the significance of who Jesus Christ is. God incarnate comes into the world as God, created the universe and the stars. That is the God that comes into the world, okay? The Word that became flesh. God incarnate, God with us. I mean, Jesus Christ is God there with us. And he, if anything, is a person that we can go to and give our allegiance, which we do. But the way that he leads us, the way he shows us how to lead, is by serving us. That really, really wraps my mind up a little bit. I just cannot imagine God coming to me, getting on his knees and serving me. I can't imagine him serving me as he leads me throughout the world. He does this with humility. He does this in a way that is so humble, so pure, that it baffles my mind that a God would do that. That's counterintuitive. That does not happen in the real world. Follow the politicians. Follow their entourage. Follow them and see how people just, again, what they expect from people serving them. Not all of them are that way, but just see that power that people have. So God gives us, Jesus gives us this beautiful picture that the way that we lead others is we serve others. And sadly, we can always get ourselves back in that situation that people serve us. We could do that so many ways. We could do that as a spouse. We could do that as a parent. We could do that as a religious leader. We could do that as a boss, an owner of a company. There's so many ways we can fall back and just kind of think that people are to serve me. They're less than me. I have greater value. So I'm going to end with this. Jesus wants us to lead by serving, and you'll at least receive two blessings. Two blessings. But Jesus wants us to lead by serving. First of all, that this actually was a story, and I don't know if Russ heard about the story, but about 15 years ago, there was an article that was written in Newsweek about a one-star general that used a different type of leadership style when it came for leading his men. In fact, his men loved him. I'm hoping that I'm right with this. But what he did is he took on that attitude that I'm going to serve my men as a leader. And he did that. It blew them away a little bit, but what happened was that the respect that he got and the love that he got from his soldiers and those people that he was overseeing was amazing. I mean, that's a hard thing to do, to be able to have that type of position and kind of switch a little bit. So I just want you know that we are all leaders. There's no one here that's not a leader. We got to get out of our mind that all of us are leaders. Now, there is the gift of leadership where a person can stand up and put together a strategy and has a vision and say, follow me, and we follow that person. That is a gift of leadership. But all of us here are leaders. In a way that we are leaders because God has given you gifts, spiritual gifts, in which God wants you to use those gifts and lead others in those gifts. Those gifts are meant to be used in a way that you serve people with those gifts, and in the process of serving them, you are leading them. So here are some gifts that you may not think that makes you a leader. If you have the gift of ministration and you serve others with that gift, you are a leader. You're leading with that gift. If you have the gift of discernment, be able to see things in a way that other people can't see, spiritually as well as rationally and all that, that is a gift. You lead that gift and serve others, you're a leader. If you have a gift of encouraging people. When you lead and serve people with that encouragement, you come along around people and you encourage them, you are leading, you are serving them, and you are a leader. The gift of faith. There are some people out there who say, they look at a mountain and we're sitting there going, oh my goodness, we can't get up there. And the guy goes, or the person goes, yeah, we can. God can do it. I mean, those are amazing people that have a gift of faith. They serve us by encouraging us. They are leading us. There are people that give. I know of some great givers throughout my life that God has blessed them in a way that they give freely and they use it and they are serving others and they are leading us in that service. The gift of healing. There are doctors and there are nurses. There are all kinds of people that come in our lives and provide resources to help us heal. That is leadership. That is service. And we have helps, hospitality, mercy, prophecy, serving, speaking in tongues. Now, speaking in tongues is about, there are people that are so good at learning how to learn languages. They could speak 7, 8, or 9 languages. I struggle with English, okay? They have 8 or 9 languages, and that's a gift. Some people have that teaching. So just to make it down earth, but we have roles in our life. God has put us in positions to have roles. Today is Father's Day. And to me, Father's Day is not only a blessing, but also a heavy responsibility. And sometimes we have in our minds that our kids are to serve us. We don't say please to them. We don't say thank you. We expect them to serve us. And we do things, instead of leading them with our gifts, we actually are pushing them away. Being a father, a great father, is learning how to serve your children. Learning how to serve them. I think a lot of times young people get together and they're thinking about marriage and they're thinking, man, when I get married, my wife is going to be doing this for me and this for me. My husband's going to be doing this for me. You know, I could see it now. And I know, hey, I just want you to know, I had an attitude like that. I do the dishes and all that. You know, I got a little service around here. And, you know, I remember trying that on my wife the first year. And did it get far? First of all, I'm not your mom. You're sick, okay? You got a bad cold. Get up on your feet. She didn't say it that way. But I'm going to get you a cup of soup. You can get your own cup of soup. Seriously, Cynthia told me, I'm not your mom. And when if you're really sick, I'll help you. But I'm not going to be going around serving you because you feel like you need me to serve me. I learned a very, very, very valuable lesson from Cynthia. But no, the best marriages, the best parenting, children, your parents serve you in so many, many ways. But also, we're called to serve them. Serve our parents. Serve our adult parents. Serve our parents when we're adults. God really wants us to do that. So, just end with this, that God calls us to serve others. We become leaders when we serve others, when we expect other people to serve us. We're not leaders. We're not. But when we use our gifts to serve others, we truly start leading people, and we become leaders in those people's lives. And I also want you to consider about leading here in the church. Being an elder and deacon is, I believe, a beautiful call. It blows my mind still to this day that God called me to be an elder, teaching elder. I still sometimes sit back and shudder about that. Yeah, it is just an amazing situation. We are called in His kingdom to serve others and lead others. He gives us a specific calling, a specific task. That, to me, is just mind-blowing, and I don't want to take that for granted. So, Jesus expects us to lead by serving others. The two blessings we get, people will receive your leadership and they're going to be blessed. And the second blessing, you're glorifying God. Literally, when you serve others, you're reflecting God in their life, and there's something wonderful knowing that I'm doing God's will, that I'm representing God in a person's life. It is one of the best feelings, the best sense of, how can I say, wellness that a person can have. Let's bow our heads and pray. Well, I pray, and again, we thank you for all the things happened today. It was a long day. The baptism, the commissioning, the words of affirmation, all that stuff is good. This is your day. This is your service. You planned it. But also, you gave us a beautiful, beautiful picture of you coming into this world, showing us how to lead by serving others. Help us to have that vision, that understanding planted, embedded in our minds and our hearts as we serve others, as we lead others. We pray this in your Son's name. Amen.